The headlines: Israel launches new airstrikes on the Gaza Strip, killing over a dozen Palestinians, among them four children. Palestinian resistance groups slam Israel over its deadly attacks on the Gaza Strip, with Hamas saying the assassinations will not bring security to the regime. Plus, the former Pakistan Prime Minister Imran Khan is taken into custody by the law enforcement agency from a court in Islamabad. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip hold a funeral procession for the victims of Israel's pre-dawn aerial strikes that claimed the lives of 13 Palestinians. Mourners condemned the regime's air raids while carrying the victims or the bodies of the victims in the city of Gaza. Earlier, a public mourning was announced following the attacks. Three senior members of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement are among the victims. Many others were injured and several homes were targeted. Following the strikes, Israel imposed a total lockdown on Gaza, which has been blockaded by the regime for years. Israel also warned settlers in nearby settlements to go to their bunkers, fearing possible retaliatory rocket attacks from the coastal strip. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance groups have warned the Israeli regime against its latest bloodshed in the besieged Gaza Strip.
The Israeli occupation committed a great crime and treacherous aggression against our people in the Gaza Strip by bombing residential areas and homes, which led to the killing of children and women and targeted the leaders of the resistance. Our people and the resistance know how to respond to this great crime and make the occupation pay the price for this aggression on the Gaza Strip.
Hamas political bureau chief Esmail Haniyeh also said the assassination of the resistance leaders will not bring security to the regime. The Islamic Jihad movement said that Israel will pay a heavy price for its crimes. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Foreign Ministry called for international mediation to stop Israeli strikes on Gaza. Iran has also strongly condemned the attacks. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the attacks show the regime's weakness in the face of the growing resistance of Palestinian youth in the occupied territories. Syria has reacted as well, saying that it will continue to support the Palestinian people and their cause. Damascus also called for action to bring an end to the Israeli bloodshed. We're going to get the vantage point from Gaza City and from Damascus, first to Gaza City, and our correspondent Ola Al-Assi, who joins us. Ola, what is the latest there in Gaza City? We understand that the funeral procession was being held the last time that we spoke.
Yes, thousands of Palestinians actually are in the streets right now holding the procession of the martyrdom of 13 Palestinians, including, and on top of them, three commanders of the Islamic Jihad movement, Al-Quds Brigade, the military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement. And Palestinian civilians are calling for a retaliation from the Palestinian resistance, and we assume that after the burying of the dead Palestinian civilians and the commanders, the Palestinian factions and the resistance factions are going to respond in what it mentioned will be a wide and intense response to the Israeli atrocity against the Palestinian people. Thousands of Palestinians are now chanting slogans of retaliation to the Israeli atrocity of assassination and the killing of four children and four women among the Palestinian civilians, who we assume that they are sons and daughters of the Palestinian and wives of the Palestinian commanders and the resistance, the Islamic resistance commanders. After the Palestinian reaction and the threats of the Palestinian factions of the Israeli regime, the Israeli regime has warned the adjacent and nearby settlements to seek shelters because they are afraid of a wide and intense response rockets and rockets to the Israeli aggression. So far, we can't hear any firing between the two parties, but the drones, the Israeli drones, are roaming in the skies of the Gaza Strip, and a sign that there will be like escalation in the coming hours.
Thank you for that, Ola Alassi. Let's cross on over now to Damascus and have Mohammed Ali join us. Mohammed Ali, at this point, we understand Syria has had a reaction to what has occurred in the Gaza Strip. What can you tell us?
Yes, Syria's foreign ministry expressed Syria's deepest condolences to the families of the martyrs, the Palestinians who were killed at dawn by an Israeli aggression. The foreign ministry here in Damascus said that words of condemnation are not enough anymore. Genuine measures are currently required to put an end to such Israeli massacres against Palestinian people, and also measures should be taken to punish Israeli officials, those who are trying to cover up perhaps their internal crises. The foreign ministry also said in its statement that Syria renews its stand of standing beside the Palestinian people and the just Palestinian cause. Also, Syria reiterates that such a criminal attitude will only strengthen its adherence in support of the Palestinian people and cause, and also such a criminal Israeli attitude will only increase perhaps the determination of the Palestinian people, the steadfast Palestinian people, in continuing their struggle until achieving all of their rights. We all know the historic support of Syria for the Palestinian people and cause. We know that thousands of Palestinians currently live inside Syria, Palestinian refugees, and they are being treated similar to Syrian citizens. This is also this also reflects the extent of support that Syria gives to Palestinians. Also, Syria's stances are known to be supportive, of course, of resistance in general against Israel. We know that Israel is not just an enemy to the Palestinian people. Israel is an enemy to Syria. It occupies Syrian territories. During this war, Israel has supported the terrorist groups on the ground and continues to carry out attacks and aggressions on Syria in support of those remaining terrorists on the ground. And we know that Palestinians, even Palestinian refugees who live inside Syria, were also attacked in the Palestinian refugee camp of Al-Yarmouk by those terrorists, the same terrorists that are supported by Israel. So this is not a new stance by Syria. Syria always continues to express its support to the Palestinian people until regaining all of their rights.
Thank you. Mohammed Ali, our correspondent there from Damascus. Well, in the meantime, Israeli forces keep intensifying their crackdown against the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. At least a dozen people, including a teenager, have suffered bullet wounds during an Israeli raid on the flashpoint city of Nablus. The raid also left over 100 others injured by gas inhalation. The regime troopers stormed a residential area to arrest Palestinians for their alleged role in an anti-Israeli operation. They shelled their house and opened fire at residents protesting against the raid. Two Palestinians were also detained. Israel has stepped up its attacks on occupied Palestinian towns and cities in recent months. Over 100 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces in the West Bank so far this year. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan has been arrested in a move that threatens fresh political turmoil in the country. Local media say Khan was detained by the country's National Accountability Bureau in connection with a corruption case. Scores of security personnel in riot gear took Khan away in a van from the Islamabad High Court, where he had gone to seek bail in multiple cases registered against him. Pakistan's Information Ministry has not commented on the arrest. Khan is the chairman of the Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf Party. He was removed from power in April of last year after he lost a parliamentary vote of confidence. He's been accused of a host of charges ranging from terrorism to corruption, which he said were politically motivated and false. Nasser Kazmi is our correspondent joining us from Islamabad to tell us more about this. Well, I guess the question is, Nasser, how did it come about where he got arrested? And what were the circumstances?
Well, it's a long story, actually, Kaveh. We have seen that Imran Khan has been accusing the top leadership of Pakistan, including even the powerful military, that the assassination attempt which he faced last year, he nominated three people, the three top officials, including the Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, the Interior Minister Rana Sanaullah, and as well as a senior military official of Pakistan military. So after that, those accusations by Imran Khan, repeatedly Pakistan military has been issuing statements and asking him to do not blame a serving officer of Pakistan military. So we have seen that since he was ousted from power in April last year, Khan has been very hostile against Pakistan's establishment, the military establishment, and he has been labeling several accusation against the Pakistan military, the former military chief General Qamar Javed Bajwa, and many other the military officials. So we have seen that when he came with a new narrative, anti-establishment narrative in Pakistan, and he has been staging massive rallies, and we have seen that his popularity graph went very high in that time, and that's what forcing him to agitating in Pakistan and holding massive rallies against the government. And his demand was that there should be fresh elections in the country. And before today he was arrested, he once again blamed Pakistan military for to make a plot against him, to assassinate him on Sunday in Lahore when he was addressing a rally. And publicly he named the top military official in that rally. So today we have seen that the paramilitary troops arrested him from the court premises and taken him to the National Accountability Bureau Center in Rawalpindi. So this is, at the moment, we have seen that this was the arrest which was, the government has been trying to arrest him since very long, but today finally the government is successful in arresting him. But as I told you earlier, this arrest, definitely there are violent protests has been sparked all around the country. People have been starting blocking the roads. We have confirmed reports from Karachi, Lahore, Peshawar and Islamabad that the key routes have been blocked by the PTI protesters, the Khan supporters are on the streets at the moment. And we have seen that in the recent past, when the government was trying to arrest him, the people was resisting his arrest. And now when he has been arrested, and now we have to see that how the supporters of Imran Khan and the party of Imran Khan will react to his arrest at the moment. But a chaotic situation prevails in the country. We have seen that there is a huge tussle between the government and the top judiciary, as the government has blamed the top judges of the Supreme Court of Pakistan that they are favoring Imran Khan, and that's why they want to, they are stressing the government to conduct the fresh elections into two provinces, which is like the Pakistan's largest province of Punjab, and meanwhile in the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa provinces. But the government is reluctant, and they have passed several resolutions in the parliament, and they seek a refuge from the parliament that they are not going to contest, they are not going to conduct elections in the country, because at the moment Pakistan is facing huge problems, like the economy is not in a position, so the elections will be held on time, and the scheduled time of those elections are in October.
Thank you for that. We appreciate it. Nasser Kazmi there from Islamabad. Many thanks. Tehran is hosting the fifth export potential exhibition of Iran after a three-year pause due to the coronavirus pandemic. Hundreds of foreign investors are participating in the exhibition that showcases Iran's investment opportunities. Our correspondent Gisumi Shahmedi is with us from the venue with the latest on the event. All right, Gisumi, this is the third day, but the second day of when it has kicked off.
These are very exciting days in Iran for business people who are actually interested in doing business with Iran. What's the reason? Well, the reason is that after a three-year hiatus, the exhibition of introducing export opportunities in Iran, an exhibition that used to be held annually and was on hiatus because of the coronavirus pandemic, has been held once again in the Iranian capital, Tehran. As I mentioned before, it is a very important exhibition for business people who are interested in doing trade with Iran. So many people have taken the opportunity to come to Tehran over the span of 4 days when this exhibition is underway. That's pretty much the mood here. Business people who are here are happy to be doing business with Iran. Many of them are doing business directly with Iran despite the sanctions. Thank you. Back to you.
Thank you very much, Gisa Mishamidi, there at the site of the Iran Expo 2023. We do appreciate that, Gisa. Moving on with the news, in a tit-for-tat move, China has expelled the diplomat from Canada's consulate in Shanghai after Ottawa asked the Chinese diplomat to leave the country.
As a reciprocal countermeasure in reaction to Canada's unscrupulous move, China decides to declare the consul of the Consulate General of Canada in Shanghai persona non grata, who has been asked to leave China before May 13th.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman also said that Beijing reserves the right to respond further to Ottawa's unreasonable actions. He added that China's move is to safeguard its legitimate rights and interests. On Monday, Canada announced the expulsion of a diplomat from the Chinese consulate in Toronto for allegedly interfering in the country's internal affairs. Beijing has rejected the accusation, saying it has no interest in doing so. Diplomatic tensions between the two countries have been running high since the detention of a top executive of the Chinese firm Huawei in 2018 and Beijing's subsequent arrest of two Canadians on spying charges. All three were freed in 2021. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Insight. Welcome to Insight. On this episode, we will be discussing the role of the Iranian parliament in Iran's foreign policy with the spokesperson for the National Security and Foreign Policy Commission of the Iranian parliament, Dr. Abulfazl Amoui. But first, this brief analysis.
According to the Constitution of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the legislative branch, called the Islamic Shura Majlis, plays an important role in foreign policy and has to ratify any treaty or agreement that creates any obligations or expenditures for Iran. In this context, the Majlis has a supervisory role over the executive branch ministries involved in foreign affairs, particularly the Foreign Ministry, which is legally obligated to report regularly about its activities to the Majlis. Like all executive branch cabinet ministers, the Minister of Foreign Affairs has to be confirmed by the Majlis before taking office and can be removed by the Majlis if deemed not to be performing up to standard. The Majlis also has its own mechanisms of parliamentary diplomacy, a prominent example being the many bilateral parliamentary friendship groups it maintains with other legislative bodies from around the world, as well as diplomacy related to the Islamic and Asian parliamentary unions. As the historic example of the JCPOA and the current examples of Iran's membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, as well as Iran's likely future accession to the BRICS Plus shows, no international agreement is deemed legal under Iranian law until it's confirmed and ratified by the Majlis. This is in contrast to the rubber-stamp parliament that existed during the Pahlavi dynasty, which, despite some members objecting, could not even prevent the British from forcing the ruling monarch of the time to concede any claims to Bahrain during the British retreat from the Persian Gulf in 1971. Bahrain historically being Iranian territory occupied by the British when they entered the Persian Gulf in the early 19th century. Contrary to the distorted picture painted by Iran's enemies, the legislative branch, as the direct representative of a cross-section of Iranian society from all ethnic and regional backgrounds, plays an integral part in the foreign policy decision-making of Iran, and is in fact one of the greatest sources of power and credibility for the Islamic Republic in its defense of Iran's national interests and projection of power around the world, together with the executive branch, the security services, and the Supreme National Security Council. As the global order is rapidly creating new constellations and new alliances, the Islamic Shura Majlis will continue to supervise the activities of the executive branch and defend Iran's national interests, as is determined under the Constitution of the Islamic Republic, and will be a source of political power for Iran on the international scene.
Dr. Abulfaz Amoei, spokesperson for the National Security Committee of the Iranian Parliament. Thank you so much for joining us on Insight today. We've come to the Majlis here to speak with you about the role of the Parliament, of the Iranian Parliament, of the Majlis in Iranian foreign policy. As you know, and as our viewers have seen, we have done a series of programs with the different members of the foreign policy team as it relates to the foreign ministry. Today we thought it might be good to look at these issues from the perspective of the parliament. So we would like to ask you to please give us some insight first into the role of the Iranian parliament, of the Islamic consultative assembly in the larger context of Iranian foreign policy, where it becomes involved, those places that are particularly important to the Majlis. And then later we can discuss some of the other subjects specifically that you are working now on in the Majlis. So if you could please, with your permission, if we could start our conversation with you giving us a little bit of an insight, a little bit of an explanation for our viewers who are the global audience who might not be familiar about the role of the Majlis in Iranian foreign policy.
Thank you for this opportunity, and thank you, Mr. Torabi, for this interview. The Parliament is the legislative body of our country, and it pursues two main duties. One is legislation, specifically in foreign policy. The approval of our country's international obligations takes place in the Majlis, or Parliament. The second duty of the parliament in Iran is supervising the performance of executive bodies, part of which is defined in foreign policy. Therefore, the parliament has the opportunity to invite the foreign minister and officials involved in foreign affairs on various occasions. At a higher level, the representatives can raise a query to any minister, or if they recognize that an issue requires a more serious reaction, it may even reach the stage of impeachment from the replies and explanations of the ministers, as well as confirming or rejecting it by the representatives. For this reason, the parliament is generally involved in all the country's issues. It has the power to receive answers and raise questions with the country's executive branch. This is also manifested in foreign policy. In addition, parliamentarians, as representatives of the people of our nation, also perform two other duties. One is the stances they take, part of which is the collective stance which takes place in the form of statements. It is customary that the Iranian parliament and the representatives give their opinion on a joint issue, particularly foreign affairs, by signing a statement. The statement is more of a position declaration. It is non-binding, but it is an act that happens in foreign policy. Another part of the Majlis's duty in foreign policy is pursuing the issue of parliamentary diplomacy. You are well aware that parliaments, along with governments, have started their foreign relations for years. A complementary aspect of formal diplomacy is pursued in parliamentary diplomacy. This is also customary in our parliament. We follow it in our bilateral relations with other countries' parliaments, and I can specifically say that we have a parliamentary friendship group with more than 70 parliaments in the world. That is, the countries that have declared their readiness, a number of representatives who are interested in strengthening relations with that country, become members of the friendship group. A friendship group will be created in that other country as well. These two friendship groups establish relations and support issues that are of common interest to the two countries and the people's representatives are interested in them. They try to push their governments towards enhancing cooperation with the influence they have on executive organizations, or if there are controversial issues, they can move forward these relations, which are popular rather than formal. That is, these representatives pursue what they think is in the interest of their people through mutual relations in friendship groups. There is another aspect in parliamentary diplomacy. That is the issue of attending international parliamentary assemblies, the most important of which is the International Parliamentary Union, IPU, which dates back to more than 120 years and is among the oldest international institutions. The Islamic Republic of Iran and Iran's Majlis is part of this organization. An assembly is held biannually. A delegation of 15 Iranian MPs from a committee that examines the IPU's meetings and related individuals participate in this committee and express the positions of Iran's Majlis. International parliamentary assemblies are not just IPU. We have the Parliamentary Union of Islamic Countries, PUIC, where Iran's Majlis plays an effective role. We are a parliament that hosts the secretariat of this organization in Tehran. Another assembly that exists between the parliaments is APA, Association of the Asian Parliaments. This union was established by the initiative of Iran between the Asian countries' parliaments, and its secretariat is also in Tehran. There are other assemblies that we are present in as Iran's Majlis. We participate in decision-makings and declare our position and play a role in parliamentary diplomacy. As a result, Iran's Majlis plays a role in foreign policy alongside the government, alongside departments such as the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Supreme National Security Council. But beyond that, it also plays a role in determining foreign policy macro strategies, which is mostly about supervising the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and approving international laws and treaties, which must take place in Iran's Majlis according to the Constitution.
So it's interesting. You're saying that in Iran, given the system, the political system that exists, whatever decisions are being made, whatever treaties are being signed, whatever agreements, formal agreements that are being made, they all have to be ratified by the parliament, and this is something that is required by the constitution. Is this, have I understood you correct?
Yes. According to Article 129 and 135 of the Constitution, any treaty that the Islamic Republic of Iran joins, which the negotiation process and its accession is generally carried out by the government and sometimes specifically by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, must be approved by Iran's Majlis as well. Therefore, all the treaties that are binding, that is, create an obligation for our country to take an action or pay a financial cost or provide a space for another country, all of these must have the approval of the representatives of the Iranian people. Without the approval of the Iranian nation's representatives, these treaties cannot be implemented. And for this reason, Iran's Majlis has a decisive role in accepting or rejecting international commitments.
Okay, so let's look at some examples, because this is very interesting that you're mentioning this. Some people might not realize that this is the way it works in Iran, that it's a full-fledged system where you have these checks and balances between the different branches of government. And as you said, it's a complementary role that the Majlis plays with the executive branch. We have, of course, the example of the nuclear talks about the JCPOA, and also this is more of a historic example. Also, recently we have Iran's accession to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and in the future it looks like we'll be joining the BRICS organization as well. So if you could talk about these three examples that we talked about, the nuclear talks, the JCPOA, the ongoing nuclear talks, that we saw that, for example, the foreign minister talked about the time for these talks is not unlimited. There might come a time when the Majlis will decide that it's no longer needed for Iran to have those discussions with the U.S. But also the recent accession to the Shanghai Organization, as you said, it creates certain responsibilities for Iran if they want to join it, and also in the future for BRICS. So if you could please give us some insight in these three examples.
I will start with the topic of Shanghai, so I can point out an example of Majlis's role. Well, our government has adopted a new approach in which it has put strengthening relations with Asia and Eurasia countries on the agenda. This approach is also supported by the parliament. That is, the Majlis's general view is close to that of the government in this sense. In practice, this opportunity was provided for the Islamic Republic in the past year that after applying for membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, our Ministry of Foreign Affairs negotiated with the secretariat of this organization and reached a document based on which Iran became a member of this organization. Well, joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization requires that the 45 documents which have been approved so far in this organization start their approval process in the new member country. In the same framework, we received a bill from the government a few months ago, which, after reviewing them, the government proposed to the parliament to inspect these 45 documents and to ratify them if it finds them in Iran's national interests. Well, this matter was referred to the National Security and Foreign Policy Committee of the Iranian Parliament. We reviewed these documents. We invite experts from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, military, and security institutions during the review process. We listen to their opinions. We study the documents. We invite the Parliament's own research institutions, including the Research Center, to give their opinions. The MPs receive the opinion of the experts who are in touch with the Majlis, and this issue is first examined in the commission. In the National Security Commission, this matter was approved after the investigations and discussions we had with the officials of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and other officials that I mentioned, and after the commission approves the matter and voting takes place in favor of it, the matter will be brought to an open session of the Majlis. This means that all the 290 members of the Iranian parliament have the right to comment on it and debate it. Well, regarding this Shanghai document, which was received by the government in the form of two bills, we discussed both of them in an open session within 1 or 2 months. The commission presents them as a specialized body of the parliament. It says that the government has given us this bill. We have reviewed it and considered its details. The Commission's opinion is to accept these documents, to confirm the commitments in these documents as the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, after discussing the pros and cons, if there were any pros and cons, this matter was examined and both of these documents were approved last month. And in fact, the Islamic Republic of Iran, Iran's Majlis, accepted to abide by these commitments on behalf of the entire people of the Islamic Republic. Due to the benefits that membership of this organization has for us, we mutually accept these commitments, and that is when the government is allowed to submit a letter addressed to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization that we have accepted the commitments mentioned in the Shanghai Cooperation's documents. And this process has now taken place. Our government has announced to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and the organization has also informed the other members of the organization, and accordingly, the process of accepting Iran's membership is being completed. And I think that Iran will be introduced as an accepted member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in the first upcoming meeting. This was an example of the parliament's role-playing. Of course, we noticed the general political approach of the parliament, particularly in the 11th term. The parliament considers itself to be a supporter of national interests. The representatives consider themselves to be the ones who should follow the interests of the people and international cooperation, particularly with Asian and Eurasian countries. Those that do not have a hegemonic position has been received in the general view of the 11th legislature. This was also among the programs presented by the foreign minister to the 11th legislature, and the parliament, by voting for the foreign minister, actually approved the presented program, of which this program is part of.
Excuse me, just to clarify for our international audience. So, like in many countries, also in Iran, whatever minister wants to become minister is being presented by the government to become minister has to be approved by the parliament. So there's never a foreign minister in Iran that doesn't have the approval of the parliament.
It's true. The MPs must give a vote of confidence to all ministers. In fact, they should trust both the personal competence of those who are suited for this position and their presented program. In particular, the Minister of Foreign Affairs goes through the same process. All our foreign ministers have gone through the same process, and this was also the case for our recent minister, Dr. Hossein Amir Abdullahian, and both his competence and program were approved with high numbers of votes in favor. But the parliament also has the possibility to observe the work process. In other words, it invites the ministers and their deputies to participate in the parliament commission's meetings and fractions in the form of discussion and exchange of opinions. It listens to the opinions and exchanges the latest info. But if it wants to receive an official answer, or if there is any ambiguity or criticism, it'll use tools such as notice, query, or impeachment, which are the representatives' tools, to get an official answer from a minister. Therefore, our parliament is also involved in selecting people in the field of foreign policy. Of course, for us, this trust only exists regarding the ministers. I've seen that some countries have the same rules regarding ambassadors. We have dialogue sessions with ambassadors, but their appointment and selection is not a matter that is done by the Majlis. It is the duty of the executive branch. Regarding the international documents that I said we confirm, maybe more than 10 international documents are approved in the parliament almost every year. Some of these are bilateral. A clear example: recently, we approved a document that allows our government to exchange Iranian and Belgian prisoners between the two governments of Iran and Belgium. We have this exchange of convicts with many countries. And this is one of the documents that the government cannot implement without the permission of the parliament. Our bilateral cooperation, documents related to our cooperation commitments with different countries, these are also part of this. And the international example of it is Iran's accession to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. There are other discussions about new organizations in this regard. You mentioned Iran's membership of BRICS. Well, BRICS is one of the topics that the parliament is interested in. It means an institution that is trying to develop multilateralism in the international arena and there are countries that do not follow the American hegemonic position. They are looking for alternative ways for economic cooperation. This is an issue that is currently being pursued by our government. Surely, if it achieves an international document, a document is signed between our government and the member countries of BRICS and its secretariat, this document must be presented to the parliament again. We have not yet reached this stage, but as I said, the Iranian parliament agrees with this approach. Of course, there are details regarding the processing of documents that they will be examined when the documents are ready.
I have a question here, because one thing that we're witnessing in the global scene currently, which is related to BRICS, which is related to the rise of new powers, of new economic powers. We had a very interesting interview with the Deputy Foreign Minister for Economic Affairs, Dr. Safari, is the idea that the world is moving away from the dollar, from the U.S. dollar, and this hegemonic currency is no longer in the position that it is. Of course, we see that in Iran, we still are valuing some of the budget and are planning based on the dollar income that we have from oil. But we see that the world is moving towards replacing the dollar. Of course, Iran being one of the countries that's very prominent in trying to do this. If you could please give us a little information and some insight into what it is from the perspective of the parliament that can be done or is being done to move this process of de-dollarization further for Iran.
Yes, the issue of the dollar's role in stabilizing America's hegemony is a serious matter in the international system. That is, the dollar is definitely one of the effective tools that the U.S. uses to exercise its dominance. The U.S. is somehow spreading its own economic problems and its budget deficit to all parts of the world by using the dollar, and it is distancing itself from this issue, and even uses this tool as a weapon. They unilaterally sanction a country like us in using this international currency. That is why we have changes in some of our transactions with currencies in countries of the world that are depending on the dollar. A famous instance of which is Iran's frozen assets in South Korea. Well, there are some problems in order to access them due to Korea's own dependence on the U.S. dollar, and we think that the United States is actually projecting and expanding its own unilateral laws and border laws beyond its own borders. And for this reason, an acceptable criticism by international researchers is that the U.S. uses its own tools to exercise dominance, and the dollar is one of them. Therefore, Iran's Majlis definitely supports the fact to distance our foreign trade from the dollar. One of the instances that we pursue this issue is supporting bilateral and multilateral agreements with different countries, both in the economic and the national security commissions. We are among the encouraging institutions of our government. The financial department of the government, our central bank, and the Ministry of Economy enters into dialogue and interaction with countries with which we have trade. Well, most of our trade is with China, the UAE, and Iraq. We can use part of our bilateral needs through local currencies. We support this idea in this framework, and one of our demands from our government officials has always been to pay attention to the issue of national currencies in discussions with countries to strengthen international trade. Creating clearing and settlement mechanisms that are formed in trade between two countries, all of those are tools that we think by strengthening them, we can distance ourselves from using the dollar and at the same time create opportunities for Iran's international trade. It is undeniable that the Americans are applying one of the most severe sanctions regimes against Iran. But Iran is at a stage where our international trade exceeded $130 billion last year. This is an amazing figure for those who are not familiar with our economic system and activities. And in this path, we definitely welcome the increase in bilateral cooperation with national and local currencies. The idea of using local currencies is one of the plans that the Islamic Republic is proposing. This was one of Iran's proposals in the Shanghai Economic Committees, and is the same case with BRICS. We'll use currencies in our trade which are not willing to limit their worldview to the U.S. power, such as the yuan or the ruble. We'll try to establish our own banking institutions, our own financial institutions in the countries with which we do business, so we can use the opportunity of bilateral settlement. Branches of Iranian banks or joint banks are one of the ideas that are carried out in this regard. Of course, the reality is that the Americans spare no pains to sanction Iran. To this end, they try to identify financial institutions that are somehow dependent on Iran and put them under pressure, and we are forced not to have complete transparency for some of these matters. This transparency exists for Iran's internal system. It means that Iranian government institutions know what path they should follow, but there is not an international possibility for it. Any company that wants to do trade with Iran, as it is doing right now, $130 billion trade is not possible without international cooperation. But its condition is that this cooperation should not be announced publicly because the pressure of the Americans and the Zionists exists, anti-Iranian lobbies to impose sanctions on them. But beyond all these, Iranians have achieved this ability as masters of circumventing sanctions. In many of the countries that we are dealing with today, there are more than 20 countries in the world that have been subjected to unilateral U.S. sanctions. They do business with Iran and try to use Iranian methods so that we can have this trade. The truth is that the Americans have reduced the impact of the weapon of sanctions by using it excessively. Nowadays, a business space has been formed outside the U.S. sanctions environment, which is worth several hundred billion dollars. And surely all these countries that are unjustly under sanctions are using this space, and it is developing with the current trend. Everyone in the world has understood that the Americans use the tool of the dollar for dominance, not for trade. And it is not without reason that they are extremely worried when, for example, Saudi Arabia and China want to do their business with the yuan, or when they hear that the ruble develops in the Commonwealth countries' trade. They are highly sensitive to it. This is perhaps the Americans' lack of long-term strategic understanding, that they do not know that excessive use of sanctions turns it into an ineffective tool. Surely those who follow international issues more closely have seen the U.S. Treasury's report about the failure of sanctions 2 years ago. Today, this tool is becoming a challenge for the Americans themselves. Therefore, we in the Parliament welcome the approaches that help to remove the dollar from Iran's trade. We try to trade with countries that are willing to buy Iranian products. We buy their products too. This way, we can balance our international trade from cryptocurrencies, clearing mechanisms, to local currencies. We use all these tools to be able to develop our own international trade. Pursuing the strengthening of diplomacy has been one of the priorities of the Parliament. That is, economic diplomacy is being discussed jointly in three commissions of the Parliament: the Foreign Policy, the Economic, and Industry Commissions. Our request from our government is to use the tool of diplomacy for the development of international trade. Excellent measures have been taken in this regard, but we think that Iran's trade capacity is more than this. In our surrounding region alone, more than $1,000 billion trade takes place annually, and perhaps Iran's share is very small. Some evaluations show between 3% and 4%. We think that our capacity is more than that, and one of the demands we have of our government is to follow up on this issue.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Until the next time, on Insight.
Ivy English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asle zinde ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashimi Nejad. Please stay tuned. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam in a beautiful hadith states, companionship with a sinner and a corrupt person causes suspicion and pessimism. Also, Prophet Muhammad stated, companionship is effective. The best example is iron and magnets. If you rub a piece of iron to a magnet, it will gradually work like a magnet. Thus, communications, friendship and relations are effective in our life.
کاری نکنیم که فردای قیامت فریاد بزنیم بگوییم به تعبیر قرآن.
Therefore, we must be very much careful about our friends so that in the other world we do not regret selecting our friends in this world. This is because friends in this world have influence on our deeds and behaviors, and they may lead us to the heaven or hellfire in the other world. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashim Nejad. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.